Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So are you turned off by the commercialism of the holiday season? Are you trying to spend less and find ways to celebrate that don't involve such consumerism? Maybe even hoping to save a little money? Well, my next guest says, stop that right now. That sort of puritanical thinking is wrecking the economy and destroying our spirits. James Livingston is a professor of history at Rutgers and the author now of Against Thrift, Why Consumer Culture is Good for the Economy, the Environment, and Your Soul. Professor Livingston, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And you're not just telling people to spend. We've always known that consumer spending is important for economic health. You're saying it is the essential driver of the economy and that it is actually good for us.
Yeah. Everybody knows that in the short term, there's no recovery without consumer spending. We all know that. What we don't know yet, it seems to me, is that consumer spending is the driver of growth. And that means a couple of things. First, net private investment, or just leave it at private investment, is not the essential component of growth. So insofar as we keep transferring income from wages to profits, all we're doing is inflating bubbles. We're not causing growth.
But has it always been that way? You're a history professor.
Right.
didn't we have, I don't know, of quite 200 years, but maybe a little less than that, of economic growth in the United States that was not based on consumer spending?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I think the historical question is essential. In fact, most of the book, I'm trying to say, let's leave theory aside. Let's try to do it in terms of history. You're right. From approximately 1820 to 1920, the real driver of growth was increasing private investment. The government was certainly a subsidizer of private investment and of growth. But private investment did, in fact, drive growth. After 1919, though, all bets are off. Between 1900 and 1930, net investment declines by 20%. And this is not according to some crazy leftist. This is Simon Kuznets, the founding father of national income and product accounts. Net investment never recovered except for a very small blip in the late 1950s. It has been declining ever since. Now, economists will say, well, of course it's declining. There's a multiplier effect. My point is that if net private investment is declining and we've had growth nonetheless, indeed robust growth, then why not embrace consumer spending as the cause of growth? And with it, and this is the hard part, consumer culture, what goes with it?
And we'll get to consumer culture and the provocative parts of your title that say consumer culture is good for the environment and good for your soul. But just on the economic growth model for a moment.
Right.
I think a lot of Americans believe now that it's kind of a house of cards. And one of the reasons that we're in the recession that we're in, the Great Recession that we're in, is because the economy was built on a kind of fake housing bubble as a house of cards. And that in the long run, we can't just consume stuff if we're not making stuff
right,
in order to have a fundamental base that's real for economic growth.
Right. I guess there's two questions there. Was the housing bubble or was the crisis caused by overconsumption? Was it Main Street's fault just as much as Wall Street?
And credit, personal credit in that respect.
I think not. I think the overextension of credit, the drop in savings rates after 1995, were clearly a consequence of stagnating wages. People had to go into debt to send their kids to school. Even to make ends meet. So I don't think that the crisis is caused by hedonistic consumer indulgence or credit. That was necessary, and in fact, the recourse to credit caused growth. It was the wrong basis for growth, perhaps. On the other hand, the way to cause robust growth in the same terms would be to redistribute income away from profits towards wages. In other words, stop wage stagnation. And let's go for profit stagnation for a while, see what happens.
But that's a whole different topic, isn't it?
I mean, sure is.
That's what they're stuck on in Washington time after time.
That's right. That's
right?
Exactly right.
So you would need to redistribute income more toward the stagnating middle class.
Exactly.
In order for consumer spending to be a base of economic growth for long term.
Couldn't put it better myself. That's right.
All right. Well, my guest is James Livingston, history professor at Rutgers and the author of Against Thrift, Why Consumer Culture is Good for the Economy, the Environment, and Your Soul. Your soul?
Yeah. That's the hard part. That's part two of the book. Yeah, it's the hard part. But look at it this way. When we're at work, when we're producing goods, and when we're saving, we're actually withholding energy. Saving is a psychological disposition. It's a way of being in the world as well as an economic act. What I'm trying to suggest is that consuming, when we're at our leisure, when we're not producing goods, we treat others less instrumentally than we do when we're producing goods or when we're looking for a profit or when we're looking for a surplus that takes a monetary form. So when we're at our leisure, then people look to us as ends in themselves rather than means to the ends of our, say, careers or our bigger bonuses. In that sense, our generosity is nourished by interaction after hours, after work, after we're done trying to produce something or trying to make a living. I'm not against work, except that I think we need to reduce its scope in our lives. We need to ask ourselves, what is it we do after work, and is that the place where we find ourselves? Is that where our souls become larger, more generous?
But
I think
not,
so.
That's not necessarily in spending.
That right,
could be
that's
in
true.
Being with your family,
right.
Being with your congregation.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Again, that's after hours, right? And I think when we say – when I try to deal with consumer culture, I'm not saying that's just consuming things. But think about what we do when we buy something. Typically, we're buying something for somebody else. Even when we're – like let's say you're a mother. You're in a grocery store. What are you doing? You're buying things for your family. You're buying things for others. In effect, you never shop alone in that sense. The buying things is a socializing experience, not a privatizing experience.
But that's a pretty basic example, buying things mm-hmm. for your family
right.
in a grocery store.
Right.
Are you making a distinction between consumerism being good for your soul and materialism?
Yeah, I think it might be a crucial one. On the other hand, look at it this way. Human beings don't know themselves. They can't come to know themselves except through objects. That is, you know, they materialize their desires. They express themselves in things. William Carlos Williams, the poet, once said, no ideas but in things. I think that's just generally true, so that when people talk about consumer culture as a materialistic problem, my response is, well, okay, find me a problem that's not, if we're talking about the human species. You know, if you want to talk about something else, fine. But
We'll keep it to people in this
okay.
conversation,
okay.
sure.
All right.
We're getting into other planets and black holes in our next segment.
Okay.
But how is delayed gratification, saving for a rainy day,
right.
bad for us? Isn't restraint a virtue?
Yes and no. We can't simply throw it out. Every adult knows that part of their task, whether they have children or not, is to teach younger people to delay gratification. I think, however, we have finally reached the limit of that, and we are disfiguring our souls as well as our society insofar as we don't learn to stop withholding. And again, I would go back to what I said about that this is an emotional or a psychological disposition as well as an economic act, this saving, this withholding from the present. We all say to ourselves, oh, we have to live in the moment. Well, we have reached a stage in our economic development where we can actually afford to do that. We don't have to withhold, if you will. We don't have to save. Now, think of the way that people save. Most consumers, let's talk about the 99%. I appreciate that introduction early on. When people save, they typically do two things. They're saving for retirement or they're investing in a house. Now, both things, they're not selfish activities. If you buy a house, you're not buying it just for yourself. You expect the people to be there. You expect your family to be there. When you invest in a retirement account, you're assuming that you're not going to be alone. This is, again, it's a social activity. It's not a and so in that sense, there's nothing wrong with saving. I just want us to reexamine the what seems to be a cultural and psychological imperative to impose austerity upon ourselves when it's disfiguring both the economy and our souls.
Rutgers history professor James Livingston, his book Against Thrift, Why Consumer Culture is Good for the Economy, the Environment, and Your Soul, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Frank in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Professor Livingston. Hi.
I just wanted to share a thought about savings, investment, and consumer culture. If businesses do not see a profitable opportunity, they're not going to make any investment. And typically in the U.S., it seems like businesses don't look at the short term and are not willing to save or make investments. Right now they're saving. They're not, you know, many corporations have huge piles of cash, and they're not investing that in any positive way, primarily because they are skittish about the opportunities for returns.
Right. They see a lot of risk right now, and there's a cycle, and we're in the pullback part of the cycle,
right,
big time. Vered in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes. I would just like to say that a consumer culture always finds itself chasing its tail. You work to spend, and I don't think that's particularly healthy. And, you know, the idea that consumerism is in any way an altruistic endeavor, I think is really a far reach. I see so many people buying for themselves very narcissistically. You know, in the Asian cultures, when you say to people, oh, I like this, it's something you're wearing, they actually give it to you. Here in the West, you say, oh, I like what you're wearing, and someone will say, oh, I have 10 of them in different colors. It just tends to be a type of culture that is not giving, but just interested. You become addicted to just buying. I don't think that's healthy.
Thank you. What about the acquisitiveness?
I don't see it. I was out on Black Friday. I was at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was in Macy's with the crowds, and most of the people I talked to were in large gaggles, and they were. It was a party. Basically, it was fun.
You think we hear about the shopper who maces other shoppers to get the plasma television, but we don't hear about the bigger social picture.
I think that's right. I can't defend anybody who would use pepper spray on a fellow shopper. I'd have to be insane to do that. On the other hand, I think that's the exception that proves the rule that I'm trying to establish. Now, I agree with the caller that buying things is not necessarily an altruistic endeavor. I hope I haven't suggested as much. But is it narcissistic? I don't know. It seems to me, When you buy a garment, you're not looking at yourself from inside. You're looking at yourself from outside. You have to know what you will look like to other people. You're incorporating strangers and others into your own image of yourself. That's a good thing. People who can't see themselves from outside, from another point of view, are narcissistic. They're gods or monsters, and we don't want anything to do with them.
More narcissistic for not caring how you look,
exactly,
than caring what you're wearing. Right. Anthony in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Professor. Anthony Annarelli, class of 1980, Rutgers College. I also have a background in environmental science, uh-huh, and I ask you, what happens when we reach maximum consumption of valuable resources because of consumer consumption?
Yeah.
And we'll end on this, and that's the part that we hadn't touched on yet, your subtitle, Why Consumer Culture is Good for the Economy, the Environment, and Your Soul. I guess Anthony thinks, as probably most of our listeners think, that we're, you know, crashing toward environmental disaster because of our voracious overconsumption.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. It's the hardest part of the book for me. Here, look at it this way. What consumer culture does for us is to allow us to ask, what is growth for? That's really the crucial question. If we can ask that question, and if we can ask it in political venues as well as in the private sector, then we've got, I think, a way of addressing your question, and that is, what are the limits to growth? How can we limit growth? Do we want to limit growth? The reason I think consumer culture is a better alternative than the existing model of growth is that the existing model of growth is based on let's generate more profit. Let's generate growth for its own sake. It seems to me insanely out of control. And I think if we decenter decisions about our economic future, in other words, not leave our economic future in the hands of the oligarchy, the 1%, if we decenter those decisions, it seems to me we have a better chance of asking the question that you raise. What are the limits to growth? And so that's the beginning of the argument about the environment.
By the way, there's a thread of comments on our comments page of people asking,
uh-oh,
basically, who is he really working for? Is he a shill for the Chamber of Commerce?
Not quite. No, no, I'm not. If you would like to get at that question, go to the Amazon site for the book and notice that I'm called a communist propagandist there. So,
what, from one of the readers? A reader comment?
One of the readers? Oh, I'd say about 7 or 8, yeah.
All right. James Livingston, history professor at Rutgers University. Working for Basic Books, or maybe they're working for him. They probably gave you an advance.
Yeah, they did, yes.
And the book is called Against Thrift, Why Consumer Culture is Good for the Economy, the Environment, and Your Soul. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC. And coming up next, the humbling discoveries this week of a planet kind of like ours and the biggest black holes ever found that devour whole solar systems. And we are looking for a name for this newly discovered planet that's kind of like Earth. So call us up with those or with any questions for our scientist guest upcoming on the new discoveries in the universe. 212-433-WNYC.